Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, May 16th. Energy companies brace for storm season. Several businesses have contingency plans in place to protect crews and equipment. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Storm season has arrived in the Permian Basin, the spring months when thunderstorms, tornadoes, high winds, and flash flood warnings dominate the weather reports. Midland, Odessa, in recent weeks, has seen a flurry of such warnings. Oil and gas facilities, from drilling rigs to frack fleets to compressor stations, are particularly vulnerable to severe weather, and companies take steps to keep their crews and equipment safe. Diamondback Energy tells the Reporter Telegram it has procedures in place to mitigate the effects of adverse weather conditions on its operations. Fellow Midland-based company ProPetro Services told the Reporter Telegram it, too, has several processes in place. Quote, "We track the location of all our frack crews through a remote operations center at our main operations office," Adam Munoz, president and chief operating officer, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Continuing the quote, "With this, we also track the weather around those crews in order to give them a heads up on severe weather that might be heading their way," end quote. Also, he added, when the National Weather Service issues a severe weather warning or watch, ProPetro's HSE, that is, Health, Safety, and Environment Department, will send out a company-wide communication that gives advice on how to prepare for the event. It gives recommendations on what to do if on the worksite, workplace, outside, or in a vehicle, end quote. Pipeline company Kinder Morgan says it has in place severe weather plans that are specific to each business unit and vary per potential incident and natural disaster. The company also conducts drills regularly and coordinates with local area first responders annually. Like Kinder Morgan, Neighbors Industries has contingency plans that are specific to each site. In Oklahoma and the Texas Panhandle, for example, each drill site is required to have tornado shelters. Quote, "All rigs, whether in West Texas, offshore, or on the North Slope of Alaska, are required to have site-specific emergency response plans posted," Josh Price, the company's U.S. Vice President of Drilling, told a Reporter Telegram in a telephone interview. He added that those plans, updated annually, include phone numbers for local officials and first responders, as well as corporate chain of command. Quote, "I spent 5 years in West Texas," he said. "We can get severe weather from thunderstorms to dust storms, high winds to tornadoes. You have to watch the weather," end quote. In case of a tornado, he said crews are instructed to power down the drilling rig and then muster in the VFD house, also known as the powerhouse, which he described as the heaviest skid on a drill site. West Texas winds are also planned for, according to Price. Depending on the operation, tripping pipe or moving a rig, they are stopped if winds reach or exceed 30 miles per hour. Drill site managers also have the leeway to cease operations at lower speeds if they deem it necessary, he said. About 9 years ago, he recounted, the Pecos River overflowed and rescuers had to go out in boats to get the crew. Quote, "You would not expect that in West Texas," Price said. "That's why you have to be prepared," end quote. The company is also preparing for the extreme heat of West Texas summers. Beginning in March, technicians are sent out to service air conditioners and radiators, and ice machines and cooling stations are delivered. Quote, our policy is, if it's 85 degrees or higher, we implement our hydration policy. Crews are required to drink water every hour and to document that they're drinking water. When it gets 95 or more, it's the same, but they also have to take a 10-minute cooling break and document that, said Price. MCMISD initiative draws support. Diamondback pledges $600,000 over 4 years. The story was written by Mela McEwen, oil editor. To address the educational needs of area students, as well as the region's workforce needs, Midland College and Midland Independent School District have partnered to create the College and Career Connections Initiative. That initiative has drawn strong support from Diamondback Energy, which has pledged $600,000 over a 4-year period to support the program. The first $150,000 installment was presented Wednesday at Midland College. Quote, we're focusing not only on the education landscape, but workforce, explained Ashley Colquitt, corporate affairs representative with Diamondback. The partnership creates a staffing model comprised of counselors and career coaches who support students in MISD's middle schools into college or careers. Quote, this group travels with the kids, helps them take career inventory, explains how to go to college, how to go to a technical school, how to interview for jobs, she continued, all utilizing digital platform access. Quote, the focus is on local workforce needs. It's about jobs needed here in the Permian Basin. For recruitment, for retention, we need to make sure we have the workforce providing quality service, whether it's energy, education, or healthcare. We want to take these kids and build their capacity and give them opportunities, she concluded. The initiative, quote, driven by a strategic collaboration between Midland College, Midland ISD, and Midland Philanthropy, aims to foster a culture of college and career awareness, emphasizing a growth mindset, Melissa Horner, Executive Director of Student Services at MISD, told the Reporter-Telegram by email. Quote, the primary objective is to ensure that students are well prepared for success in college and their professional lives, end quote. MISD and Midland College are committed to providing support that empowers students to excel academically and thrive and future endeavors with a particular focus on increasing enrollment of educationally disadvantaged students in dual credit and post-secondary education, Horner continued. It aims to foster a seamless transition from high school to post-secondary education or careers, ultimately ensuring that students are prepared and ready for college and career, she continued. Lori Haltom, executive director of the initiative, observed that college is something local students typically don't think about until the last minute. She cited estimates the initiative can impact 13,000 Midland students, the number enrolled from sixth grade through their senior year. Quote, the initiative is not necessary just to get them into college. It's for trade schools or other opportunities to make them better, she said. The partnership with MISD is crucial because MISD allows the counselors and coaches involved in the initiative onto campuses to work with the students and follow them and their families. Quote, MISD is giving us the opportunity to help every student, regardless of income level, regardless of their interest, she said. And Diamondback's support, Haltom said, helps put the right adults in front of the kids. End quote. YMCA expands to increase child care and programming. The story was written by Ben Schaffer. The YMCA of Midland broke ground on its northwest expansion that will meet increasing demand for after-school child care and improve quality of life. This initial part of the expansion project that broke ground Wednesday is located on the corner of Avalon and Mockingbird. The 12,500-square-foot facility will provide limited services like after-school programming, indoor pickleball, recreation for all ages, social and special events, and other services as needed, according to the YMCA of Midland. The YMCA of Midland will also be enhancing Avalon Road along the property line to a two-lane road with a center turning lane, it stated. To date, the YMCA has raised $5.6 million for the $8 million project. The projected completion date is the fall of 2025. Green space has been added on the same tract of land on the corner of Golden Gate and Mockingbird. Quote, soon it will become a vibrant hub for outdoor activities such as fishing, volleyball, tetherball, and ample open green space for other outdoor recreation, the YMCA of Midland stated. This green space will also serve as a gathering space for community organizations. Wednesday's groundbreaking is one step of the expansion process, according to the YMCA of Midland. Once the initial phase of construction is complete, master planning will begin for the remaining acreage of the total 25-acre plot of land. Quote, by proactively addressing the needs of working families and investing in the future generation, the YMCA is poised to play a pivotal role in shaping a vibrant and resilient community, CEO Christine Bearden said. Chairman of the YMCA of Midland Board, Dean Snydow, said that this expansion will open child care spots at their new location on the corner of Avalon and Mockingbird, and free up child care spots at its downtown facility. Officials from the YMCA of Midland said 200 child care spots will open. UTPB students advocate for Permian Basin in D.C. The story was written by Kesley Salinas. The Shepherd Leadership Institute and the University of Texas Permian Basin students participated in the biannual Washington, D.C. fly-in on April 30th and May 1st. Brandon Lippert, Carla Camara, Shale Castro Huertas, Minghao Liu, Zachary Levesque, Isaiah Castell, Luke Christensen, and Adrian Ramirez were the eight students who represented UTPB at the D.C. fly-in. The Shepherd Leadership Institute reached out to organizations across campus when it was selecting students to participate in this year's fly-in. Quote, each student was involved in several organizations across campus, said Savannah Woodward, the director of special events at the Shepherd Leadership Institute. They are all heavily involved at UTPB, end quote. Levesque was attending a leadership conference in Dallas, where he joined his fly-in peers for their trip. Lippert was UTPB student representative in the Archer Fellowship Program this spring at the University of Texas System in Washington, D.C. He was already at the Capitol and attended the event with the Shepherd Leadership Institute. Lippert was also able to pass the torch to Christensen, who is UTPB's Archer Fellow this summer and will be gaining meaningful internship experience in Washington, D.C. The Washington, D.C. fly-in is organized by both the Midland and Odessa Chambers of Commerce and gives participants a platform to shed light on critical issues facing the Permian Basin to industry leaders and policymakers. Over 60 citizens of the Permian Basin embarked on the Washington, D.C. fly-in. On the first day, UTPB students engaged in panels, discussions, and Q&As about the workforce and border security and immigration. Texas Senator John Cornyn and Chief Washington Media Correspondent Mike Emanuel gave remarks following the panels. The students had the chance to introduce themselves, speak about their college journey, and express their excitement about being at the fly-in event. Later, the Shepherd Leadership students and staff met with Congressman August Pfluger to discuss education affordability and security measures at the national level and were given a guided tour of the Capitol building. Students networked with local community leaders, elected officials, and industry leaders at the Party with the Permian reception at Capitol Crossing. After the reception, Shepherd Leadership students and staff explored Washington, D.C. through a guided tour of monuments and memorials at the National Mall. The next day, students and staff visited the Library of Congress and the White House, where they attended a bipartisan congressional panel moderated by Congressman Pfluger and toured the White House. The fly-in concluded in a closing dinner at Clyde's of Gallery Place, where students reflected on and shared their experiences with the other participants from the Permian Basin. Quote, "This was my first year attending a D.C. fly-in," Woodward said. "It's an engaging and impactful experience," end quote. Woodward said her favorite part about the Washington, D.C. fly-in was to see the students engage with leaders at the national level and local leaders that they hadn't met before. The Shepherd Leadership Institute is eagerly preparing for next year's fly-in to the Texas Capitol. Quote, "We are so proud of our students," Woodward said. "We received great feedback about their engagement throughout the event. It's inspiring and reassuring to hear this about our students," end quote. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, May 16th. Glenn James Ellis, Sr. Glenn was born in Woods Cross, Utah on July 8, 1932, the son of Montague, Monty Ellis, and Edna James Ellis. He passed away on May 13th. Glenn spent his early years in Woods Cross and later moved to Salt Lake City, Utah. In 1954, Glenn met Lucille Thagard of Downey, California. They married in 1956. After graduation from the University of Utah, the couple, along with their 2-year-old son, Glenn Jr., moved to Cuyahoga, Texas, where Glenn farmed cotton for a living. Other endeavors led to investing in the oil and gas business. In 1966, the family built a home in Pecos, Texas. They remained in Pecos until the fall of 1983, where they relocated to Midland. Midland was their home until Glenn's death. Glenn, along with his son Glenn Jr., operated Ellis Petroleum Incorporated. In addition, Glenn continued to farm and at various times owned ranches in Texas, New Mexico, and Idaho. Glenn's civic activities included 6 years on the Pecos City Council, 11 years on the board of directors at the Pecos Savings and Loan, and as a board member and president of the Pecos Valley Country Club. He was a master mason. Glenn was preceded in death by his father, Montague Ellis, mother, Edna Ellis. a younger brother, Vaughn Ellis, and his daughter-in-law, Claire Thompson Ellis. He is survived by his wife, Lucille Thigard Ellis, son, Glenn James Ellis, Jr., and Barbara Sledge, daughter, Dawn Balin Ellis of Dallas, Texas, sister, Karma Frankos of Salt Lake City, Utah, as well as several grandchildren and great-grandchildren. A graveside service will be held on Saturday, May 18th at 3 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park, and all are invited to join the family for a celebration of Glenn's life at 4 o'clock at the Racquet Club of Midland. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Scottish Rite Hospital in Dallas, First Presbyterian Church of Midland at 800 West Texas Avenue in Midland, or the charity of your choice. Ryan Shea Pettigrew, known to all as Shea, age 42, of Midland, passed away on May 10th. A come-and-go visitation will be held from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. on Saturday, May 18th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. There will be a funeral service in Portales, New Mexico, at Wheeler Mortuary on Monday, May 20th at 10 a.m. A burial will follow at Kenna Cemetery. A celebration of life party with food, music, and dancing to honor all of Shea's favorite things is being planned at a later date. Shea was born on March 7, 1982, in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and adopted by Kit and Ann Pettigrew at the age of 9 days old. In 2009, his daughter Mallory was born. He enjoyed teaching her how to ride horses and instilled his passion for cooking in her. In 2017, Shea met the love of his life, Jen, and they married in 2018. Later in life, Shea developed a love for cooking and entering barbecue competitions. He is survived by his wife, Jennifer Harkey of Midland, daughter Mallory Pettigrew, stepsons Jacob and Jaden Harkey, his parents Kit and Ann Pettigrew of Dora, New Mexico, sister Deshaun Osborne and husband Carrie of Dora, New Mexico, and their children Katie and Kason, along with numerous aunts, uncles, cousins, and friends. He is preceded in death by his maternal grandparents, Jake and Maureen Howard, and paternal grandparents, John and Maureen Pettigrew, and several other family members. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the Baptist Children's Home, 2200 South Avenue I, Portales, New Mexico, or the New Mexico Christian Children's Home in Portales, New Mexico. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Edward Connolly Jr. passed away peacefully on Friday, May 10th in Midland at the age of 78. He was born on October 5, 1945, in Vicksburg, Mississippi, to Edward Connolly Sr. and Dorothy Klein Connolly. He married Anna Marie Wilbanks in 1967. After graduating from Odessa High School in 1964, he attended Odessa College on a baseball scholarship and then went on to Pasadena College in California to further his baseball career. He was drafted into the Army and served in Vietnam from July 1969 to July 1970. After his discharge from the Army, he completed his bachelor's degree in accounting at the University of Texas at Austin. Ed worked as a certified public accountant for several local companies. In 1985, he began working for the FDIC in Midland. His career with the FDIC took the family to San Antonio, Texas, Irvine, California, and Plano, Texas. Ed and Anna Marie retired to Granbury, Texas in 2009. Ed and Anna Marie returned to Midland in 2012. He was a committed member of Golf Course Road Church of Christ, where he always found ways to serve behind the scenes. Ed is survived by his loving wife of nearly 57 years, Anna Marie Connolly, his two children, Jeff Connolly of Fort Worth, Texas, and Amanda Grigsby of Midland, Texas, as well as several grandchildren. He is also survived by his brothers, Joe Connolly of Midland, Dale Connolly of Midland, and Don Connolly of Aledo, Texas, and several nieces and nephews. In lieu of flowers, please consider a donation to the Permian Basin Honor Flight or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Here is the Dear Abby column that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, May 16th. Gifts given by in-law look awfully familiar. Dear Abby, I recently married John, the love of my life. I have a great relationship with my mother-in-law, Sarah. She and my father-in-law are retired and well off financially. For each special occasion, John and I thoughtfully select gifts for his parents, and we have spent extra to ensure that our gifts convey our love and appreciation for them. The problem is, Sarah gifts us trash, literally. On several occasions, we have received broken items in random boxes, items with missing pieces, and used items, including kitchen and cooking utensils. This happens every holiday. She has also gifted our child secondhand toys and clothes, most of which were already missing pieces or were several sizes too small. After talking to other family members, I learned that Sarah has been gifting junk for years, but her family members have never addressed the issue with her for fear of upsetting her. My sister-in-law told me she has witnessed Sarah dig items out of her basement and wrap them as gifts. Abby, this leaves a terrible taste in my mouth and has led me to feel a slight resentment towards Sarah. I believe her actions are disrespectful and in poor taste. I don't want to cause hurt feelings, but I need this behavior to stop. How can I convey to Sarah that I need her to quit gifting us junk? Signed, Regifted in North Carolina. Dear Regifted, do it in plain English, with your husband present, before the next gift-giving occasion arises. Convey that if she has second-hand items she wants to get rid of, she should donate them to her favorite charity thrift shop. Then tell her you don't need anything and, in the future, you would prefer she give you a nice card, preferably one that hasn't been recycled. Dear Abby, years ago, after high school, I spent a semester abroad where I met and fell madly in love with another American student in the same program. We dated off and on for several years and remained close friends. Even after I'd married someone else, we would write often and occasionally travel together. He and my husband got along well. Then he met the woman who eventually became his wife, and she preferred we not maintain our friendship. He and I haven't spoken in at least 15 years. Recently, one of the teachers of our semester abroad retired and gave away a pile of photos, including ones from the program I was in. I digitized the images and would love to share them with my old friend. I sent an email to the most recent address I have for him and received no reply. Now I'm not sure if it's because it's a bad email address or because he's not interested in starting a conversation with me. A quick non-stalking web search did not immediately turn up a second address. Is it worth another try? I'm pretty sure I could contact him through his family, but do you think it's better to let it go? In my heart, I know I'm using the pictures as an excuse to get in touch, but I don't have nefarious intentions. Signed, Right Decision in the East. Dear Right Decision, I'm voting no. Whether or not you are trying to reach out to this man for nefarious reasons, the result would be that his wife would be upset about it. Let it go. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or Post Office Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, May 16th. UTPB students winning artwork, Grace's Window at Wagner Noel. University of Texas Permian Basin art student Jacqueline Vickers winning artwork, now graces one of Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center's windows, measuring an impressive 9 feet in height by 11 feet in width. This art installation showcases not only the talent of local artists, but also the rich culture of West Texas. This piece will be displayed on a window near the box office entrance, facing west for 6 months. It will provide an engaging backdrop for patrons seeking a unique photo opportunity. After the unveiling, Vickers shares her thoughts on the significance of having her artwork displayed on the building's window. I feel very blessed. This was a positive light in a lot of darkness that our life has been seeing. It's been rough, so to have this, it tells me I'm heading in the right direction. As the artwork takes its place as a prominent feature at Wagner Noel PAC, they invite members of the community and art enthusiasts to visit the building and experience the beauty of West Texas captured in Vickers' masterpiece. Pfluger introduces Defending American Property Abroad Act. Congressman August Pfluger, Texas 11, Wednesday introduced the Defending American Property Abroad Act, a crucial piece of legislation aimed at protecting American companies operating abroad, particularly in the Western Hemisphere. The need for this legislation has been underscored by recent actions taken by the Mexican government, which threatened the property rights of American companies, a news release said. For example, President Andrés Manuel López Obrador's plan to seize control of a quarry and port owned by Vulcan Minerals Company in Mexico poses a direct threat to American economic interests. American companies operating abroad should not have to fear arbitrary government actions that undermine their property rights, Pfluger said in the release. The Defending American Property Abroad Act will ensure that such actions do not go unchecked and that American businesses are protected from unjust expropriation. The protection of American property rights abroad is essential to fostering economic growth and maintaining our national security. I urge my colleagues in Congress to support this critical legislation and send a clear message that the United States will not tolerate unjust actions against American companies. Key provisions of the bill include prohibiting trade partners in the Western Hemisphere from engaging in certain activities such as docking vessels and importing goods if they have expropriated or otherwise seized property owned by American entities, requiring the Secretary of Homeland Security to designate prohibited properties and provide regular reports to Congress on enforcement efforts, mandating reports from various agencies on the economic and national security implications of actions taken by foreign trade partners. The Defending American Property Abroad Act has garnered bipartisan support with original co-sponsor Representatives Terry Savelle, Alabama 7, Jerry Carl, Alabama 01, Robert B. Alderholt, Alabama 04, Salud Carbajal, California 24, Barry Moore, Alabama 02, Brian Mast, Florida 21, Gary J. Palmer, Alabama 06, and Vicente Gonzalez, Texas 37. Black Gold Tattoo Expo this weekend. The Black Gold Tattoo Expo is scheduled May 17th through 19th at the Horseshoe Arena Pavilion Hall S, 2514 Arena Trail in Midland. Lubbock tattoo artist and ink master Season 10 contestant Mike Diaz is excited to host this amazing expo in the Tall City, a news release said. The Black Gold Tattoo Expo brings industry professionals and tattoo lovers together under one roof. More than 150 of the nation's best tattoo artists, including top local and national artists, will be on hand. There will be numerous vendors, face painting, and more. Also, don't miss the opportunity to get some ink at the famous Hole in the Wall booth. Daily tattoo competitions will be held for individuals to show off their new ink. Live DJ and hang bar contest are just a few of the other exciting things happening throughout the weekend. The Black Gold Tattoo Expo will run from 1 p.m. to 11 p.m. Friday, noon to 11 p.m. Saturday, and noon to 8 p.m. Sunday. Tickets are $20 for a day pass and $40 for a weekend pass. Children 12 and under are free. Visit www.blackgoldtattooexpo.com for more information. Sol Ross announces schedule for summer guided hikes. Sol Ross State University has announced the schedule for the summer 2024 series of guided hikes on Hancock Hill. The guided hikes began this past spring, each led by a subject matter expert from Sol Ross State. Themes vary, but participants will learn about the history of Alpine and SRSU and the natural history of Hancock Hill while taking in stunning views. The 1.8-mile hike is moderately strenuous and begins at 9 a.m. on Saturday mornings and lasts approximately 2 hours. In honor of National Trails Day on June 1st, two different groups will start at 9 a.m., including a shortened family hike, during which children and their parents will hike less than a mile and use the Seek app to identify plants and animals, and the Hancock Hill Trail History Hike, which will take the regular 1.8-mile route to learn about the trail system. The Big Bend Trails Alliance, Trail Advocacy, and Sustainable Trail Design and Maintenance. The summer schedule is as follows. June 1st, Family Hike, Dr. Maureen Frank and Trail History, Dr. Kevin Urbanczyk. July 13th, Insects by Dr. Chris Ritzy. August 10th, Geology by Dr. Kevin Urbanczyk. The hikes are free and open to the public, though only 12 hikers will be allowed for each event. A reservation is required and can be made online at www.solross.edu/guided-hikes. The September through December dates will be announced at the end of the summer season. Hancock Hill Guided Hikes are a collaborative effort among the Borderlands Research Institute, the Center for Big Bend Studies, Rio Grande Research Center, and the Department of Geology. Additional guides are being sought. Interested students, faculty, and staff must be available to lead 1 to 2 hikes per year. For more information, email guidedhikes@solross.edu. Permian student awarded Phillips 66 scholarship. Permian High School's Madison Morga is among the 56 high school seniors across the U.S. who will receive $16,000 college scholarships from the Phillips 66 Dependent Scholarship Program. The competitive program is open to outstanding college-bound students whose parents work for Phillips 66 and certain subsidiary companies. Madison is the daughter of Phillips 66 employee Javier Morga. The scholarships are based on academic excellence, community service, and financial need. The award reflects the company's mission of improving lives and supporting its communities. We congratulate Madison on their exceptional academic achievements and dedication to community service. Courtney Meadow, Phillips 66 Manager of Social Impact, said in a news release, "Education is a core focus area for Phillips 66, and we are proud to support those promising young students in the next chapter of their academic journey." Phillips 66 has awarded $8.5 million in scholarships to 649 students since the start of the program in 2013. Scholarship America, a neutral third-party administrator of educational assistance programs, selects the recipients and manages the program for Phillips 66. Phillips 66, New York Stock Exchange, PSX, is a leading diversified and integrated downstream energy provider that manufactures, transports, and markets products that drive the global economy. The company's portfolio includes midstream, chemicals, refining and marketing, and specialties businesses. Headquartered in Houston, Phillips 66 has employees around the globe who are committed to safety and reliability, providing energy and improving lives, while pursuing a lower carbon future. For more information, visit Phillips66.com or follow at Phillips66CO on LinkedIn. Kellis Turner Park groundbreaking. Ector County has scheduled a groundbreaking ceremony at 11:30 a.m. Friday for the installation of new playground equipment at Kellis Turner Park, located at 2261 Sycamore Drive. City lifts boil water notice, announces temporary change in water disinfection. The City of Odessa has lifted the boil water notice for residents on the north side of the city. No one in Odessa is currently under a boil water notice. According to a Wednesday news release from the city, on May 13th, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, TCEQ, required the City of Odessa Public Water System to issue a boil water notice to inform customers, individuals, or employees in the City of Odessa that due to conditions which occurred recently in the public water system, the water from this public water system was required to be boiled prior to use for drinking water or human consumption purposes. The public water system has taken the necessary corrective actions to restore the quality of the water distributed by this public water system used for drinking water or human consumption purposes, and has provided TCEQ with laboratory test results that indicate that the water no longer requires boiling prior to use as of May 15th, the release concluded. In a second news release, the City of Odessa announced a temporary change to the method used to disinfect the water supply on Friday, May 31st through June 29th. Residents may notice a bleach or chlorine-like smell in the water, but it is nothing to be concerned about. During this interim period of approximately 30 days, the city will use only chlorine to disinfect the water supply instead of the combination of chlorine and ammonia to form chloramines. The change in disinfection will be implemented as a proactive maintenance activity in the distribution system to assist in maintaining adequate chlorine residuals. The city has made this same change to its disinfectant in past years with minimal impact on its customers. The Texas Commission on Environmental Quality has been notified of the change in the treatment of the water and concurs that it is the best method of ensuring that adequate chlorine residuals are maintained throughout the distribution system. Obituaries, Glenda Baggett obituary. Glenda Nell Baggett, 87, of Odessa, passed away on May 11th in her Odessa home, surrounded by her family, after a short illness. Glenda was born on February 5th, 1937, in Electra, Texas, to Lois and Cecil Henderson. A visitation will be held at 12 p.m. on Wednesday, May 15th at Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home with a memorial service to follow there at 1 p.m. with Jay Swoland officiating. Burial will follow immediately after the service. Penny Lane Scott. Penny Lane Scott, 61, of Roanoke, Texas, passed away on Tuesday, May 7th. Penny was born on August 12, 1962. Graveside service will be May 18th at 2 p.m. at Sunset Memorial Garden and Funeral Home. Lourdes Baza Bland. Services will be scheduled at a later date. Lourdes Bland Baza, 91, of Odessa, died Monday, May 13th in Odessa. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Odessa. Jesus Alonso Chavez Jr. Jesus Alonso Chavez Jr., 49, of Andrews, passed away on Wednesday, May 8th. The viewing will be from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Friday, May 17th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. A rosary will be held at 6 p.m. on Friday, May 17th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, May 18th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Hulon Doug Cox. Hulon Doug Cox, 76, of Odessa, died Sunday, May 12th in Odessa. Graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. May 18th at Sunset Memorial Gardens, Reverend Jimmy Braswell officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Antonia Trevino Flores. Antonia Flores Trevino, 75, of Odessa, died Tuesday, May 7th in Fort Worth. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. May 17th at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory of Odessa. Crime Stoppers seeking OHS vandalism tips. Odessa Crime Stoppers is asking for information about overnight vandalism at Odessa High School, according to a post on X, formerly Twitter. The photos posted look like graffiti, was painted on OHS mascot horse, and on the walls of the school. They request people call them at 432-333-TIPS or use the P3 TIPS application. If your information leads to an arrest, it could be worth some money. Anonymous tips are accepted only through Crime Stoppers website, 333tips.org, through Crime Stoppers app, P3 tips, and through calls to 432-333-TIPS. Only tips and calls directly to Crime Stoppers are anonymous and reward eligible. The entire Crime Stoppers process from tip to reward is handled without identifying the tipster. No one will know you helped solve this crime, the post said. Murray, bond sale compliment to board and community. Ector County ISD's bonds went on sale May 14th, and they had $338 million in requests for a $179 million offering. The three-proposition bond was $436,109,000, but only one proposition for $424 million passed. With interest rates being lower than projected at 3.77% instead of 3.84%, Superintendent Scott Murray said in his media call Wednesday that it will save $2.9 million in interest over the life of the bond. Community National Bank bought $3 million worth of bonds Tuesday morning, Murray said at the May 14th ECISD board workshop. Murray said the bonds sold are a compliment to the Board of Trustees and the decisions they have made as good financial stewards and community members who approve the bond. all of those decisions set the course for a very healthy opportunity for ECISD in the bond market, Murray said. It was an exciting day for the community. We'll be doing that again in the month of June. Last Friday, 353 ECISD teachers earned the Teacher Incentive Allotment. These teachers together earned right at $3.1 million. We had an exciting day delivering really large checks to those individual teachers. That $3.1 million represents the hard work of those teachers. That money is not a gift. It is earned by those individual teachers because of the work they do with students, demonstrated through student growth on a variety of assessments as well as their own evaluation instrument. Those two coupled together allow our teachers to take advantage of this incredible opportunity, Murray said. He added that they continue to expand that program so that each year more teachers have access. This Friday is the first graduation of six. Murray cautioned residents that there will be a lot of traffic around a variety of venues. Asked about whether he thinks legislators should come back for a special session on education, he said he would encourage it, not only for ECISD, but districts across the state. Districts across the state of Texas are making dire cuts because they have not been appropriately funded, not just this year, but for the past 5 years. Texas lags behind. We're in the bottom 10 of the 50 states in these United States. When we look at funding of public education within our state, the most effective investment that we can make is an investment in our children. That investment that we make in children pays dividends not only for society, but for those individual students themselves, Murray said. I would strongly urge our legislature to come back into session, then have a singular focus, and that focus should be the 5.5 million public school children and the financial needs that our public schools have today in order to serve those kids. ECISD faces a $24 million deficit due to the lack of funding. Services will be negatively affected next year because of that lack of funding. We need funding for school safety. Our law enforcement officers are not appropriately funded, funding for additional teachers, funding for supplies and materials. Our special education students, a variety of areas that have been touched by the $24 million in cuts that we've been forced to make, he added. At this time, we'll be moving forward with those cuts, but certainly if our legislators come back in session and pay attention to the needs of our students, then we would hopefully have a different outcome. He noted that the district was unable to provide raises for employees this year because of that lack of funding. So for a variety of reasons, he said it's important for the legislature to come back. The bond has discussed using about $6 million in elementary and secondary school emergency relief, or ESSER funds, that were awarded during COVID for a one-time 3% retention supplement. The district has 4,200 employees, and about 3,500 are expected to return. The average would be about $1,950 for hourly employees. The average would be about $930. The board has not yet approved the stipend. Chief Financial Officer Deborah Otmers said in April that the board adopts the budget. Some language will have to be put in so the stipends can be paid. Murray said he wants to see as many cuts as far away from the children as they can. The Board of Trustees is considering using $12 million of fund balance rather than cut $24 million from the budget, reduce by $12 million from that deficit, and then leverage the other $12 million, he added. Murray said the cuts are across the system, so there are little pieces felt by everyone, but not a large amount felt by any one particular group of students. But any time a school district is going to make financial cuts, kids are ultimately going to be affected because our primary service, the reason we exist in public education, is to serve children, Murray added. Last week in ECISD, there was a horrific accident May 10th that injured three students and two adults. Four people were transported to Medical Center Hospital. The Odessa Police Department and Odessa Fire Rescue responded at 11:44 a.m. that day. The crash involved a gray 2018 Toyota Highlander that drove through Alfredo's Pelletteria at 42 Street and Bonham Avenue. Rhonda Thomas, 66, of Odessa, was facing west in the 1900 block of East 42nd Street, attempting to make a left-hand turn in her Highlander. As she was making her turn through stopped traffic, she failed to yield the right-of-way to a red Ford Expedition that was traveling eastbound in the 1900 block of East 42nd Street, causing her front end to strike the left rear quarter panel of the Expedition, according to information from the city of Odessa. Thomas then accelerated instead of braking her vehicle as she entered the parking lot. Thomas struck a juvenile before crashing through the Alfredo's Pelletteria near Permian High School. There were seven people injured inside the business. One of those injured, 16-year-old Augusto de Souza, a Permian High School student and soccer player who plays for Savage FC West Texas, has been in Lubbock Hospital since Friday, CBS 7 reported. A GoFundMe page has been started to help De Souza with his recovery from the accident. Because Permian and Odessa High Schools are so large, they need students to leave campus for lunch, Mary said. We simply don't have the capacity at those two high schools to feed lunch to the 4,000 students that they serve, and so off-campus lunch not only is something that we need, but actually it's a privilege for our students to experience. We know many of our juniors and seniors enjoy that, and so we like to provide that to them. And we will continue to do that, he added. Mary said things like that can occur any time of day. We encourage our kids to be safe as they leave campus. Some of them walk and some of them drive. We'll certainly exercise as many safety protocols as we can, but off-campus lunch will continue at ECISD, he said. Everyone but De Souza was treated and released from MCH. With the Career and Technical Education Center to be financed by the bond, a Career and Technical Education Committee was formed in January. It is charged with designing the programming of the facility and the facility itself working with the architects and engineers. They've come to a point now in which they've made some specific recommendations as to the type of programming they feel should be in there, Murray said. As you can imagine, there's heavy emphasis on engineering and the energy world in which we live in the Permian Basin. So a lot of career and technical education pathways that focus on energy production, engineering sectors, welding, a lot of very specific courses and programs that would benefit the energy industry at the Permian Basin will be found in the CTE facility, he added. There will be other programming opportunities such as auto mechanics, auto tech, culinary arts, and more. He commended the members of the CTE committee, which include educators and leaders, but also businessmen and women in Ector County and elsewhere. The goal is to design a facility that will take ECISD into the future. Within the next several months, we'll be releasing all the programming that will be in there, and it should be very exciting. It's going to be a state-of-the-art facility, really world-class in nature, and we're excited about that opportunity, Mary said. Our new CTE Center is being built in cooperation with Odessa College. They will provide some dual credit courses for students and in the evenings and on weekends. That facility will be open to Odessa College to provide courses for upskilling and reskilling for the adults that live within the greater Permian Basin. So thank you to Odessa College for partnering with us, as together we build some exciting programming in this new facility, Mary said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.